Ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Welcome. Thank you for coming. And thank you, really useful theatre group, for once again being wonderfully, really useful and giving us this lovely and much-loved space for this occasion. Now, the Society for Theatre Research began giving this award in 1997 and have been doing so annually. It's produced an enormous number of very, very interesting books, and the rule is that it should be that a book that is submitted should be on any subject connected with the British or British-related theatre. And we have a wonderful shortlist today, which Howard Loxton will now tell you about. Thank you.
Thanks, Tim, and welcome to everybody. I can't see with all these lights, and I'm going to have to read, I'm afraid, because I haven't had time to learn it. it's certainly very appropriate that we should be having this event in the Theatre Royal, because it's a very important place in our theatre history, and there's a popular musical about to open here. And that represents, in a way, the remit both for the Society for Theatre Research and for this book prize. There are a lot of thank yous. Thank you to the really useful group for letting us be here. Thank you to De Winters for providing us with some invitations. And thank you to everybody else who has helped put this thing together. In particular, my wonderful judges. They've been a very stalwart team. And they put a great deal of effort into their deliberations. We've got to thank the publishers, too, who sent us the books. And those people, the editors, the designers, and especially the writers. And, of course, those of you who work in the theatre. For without you and your work, there wouldn't be any books at all. And it's good to see so many of all of you here. One thing that all of us share is a passion for theatre. And that is certainly there in the books that contend for the prize, whether they be labours of love, such as Ian Parsons' book on Swansea's Grand Theatre and other local theatres, which is published by Ringgold Books, Robert Tanich's London Stage in the 19th Century from Carnegie, with its quotes from reviews and news items, posters, pictures, or Simon Callow's collection of his journalism and other occasional writings. It's called My Life in Pieces. It's published by Nick Hearn. Callow calls his book an alternative biography, and it certainly tells a great deal about Callow, no matter what he's writing about. But actually, because much of it is drawn from already published material, it's rather borderline in terms of the criteria for the prize. When the Society set up the prize, they said it should be for a new book, no republications, and of course about British theatre. Though we are allowed to interpret that relatively broadly as British-related. The importance of London to Diaghilev, his work here and his influence on our ballet companies, certainly allows us to count that one in. Irish theatre is also too clearly related to our own to be excluded. And there's been a surge of academic publications about Irish theatre in recent years. I think we'd received quite a few this year. There was Laura Arrington's book on Yeats, the Abbey and Censorship from Oxford University Press, and books from Palgrave Macmillan included Irina Rupo's on Ibsen and the Irish Revival, and Brian Singleton's Masculinities and the Contemporary Irish Theatre. I found that one particularly intriguing. From Palgrave too, there have been more of their little pocketbooks. Theatre And is the series. It's an instance of what a tough job the judging panel has in weighing small volumes like that against the great weighty tomes. They also have to make a judgment between the value of pictures and text. The pictorial is a very important part of the theatre record. And we're not just looking at books on theatre that has happened, as in OUP's Shakespeare in Stages, edited by Christine Dimkowski and Christine Konstanty and Christy Carson, or an analysis like that of Steve Waters' The Secret Life of Plays from Nick Hearn. But we do have to keep an eye open for where theatre is going, both artistically and in its technology. We are always eager to recognise the importance of local histories that put on record information so easily lost, but they do have to compete with the publishing big gun biographies and the theatre book specialist houses. A tough brief it may be, but once again, my valiant three judges declare they've enjoyed it. I just hope they mean it. It's certainly been a delight to be part of their deliberations, and I'm now going to hand over to them to share their opinions on the shortlist and some other titles that particularly caught their attention. In fact, one of our judges, Kerry Michael, isn't able to be with us. He's bang in the middle of rehearsals for directing a new musical. He's writer and he's composer from the States and from China, and they're only here for the first couple of weeks of rehearsal, so the situation is a little bit critical. And he at least has sent us a message. He's recorded it at Stratford East, that is, not Stratford-on-Avon, and that is going to start us off.
Hello, I'm Kerry Michael, the Artistic Director of the Theatre Royal Stratford East and one of the judges on this year's Theatre Book Prize. It's been a fascinating process reading over 60 books in such a focused time. Some of the books I've hated, some were so dense I couldn't wait to read enough and then move on. But many were insightful, intelligent, honest and entertaining. The broad range of subject matters and styles was enough to keep me excited every time another oversized parcel arrived from a publisher. I hope you agree that we've come up with a really classy shortlist, and I've already recommended many of these books to friends. Michael Codron and Alan Strachan's Putting It On, published by Duckworth, is on the shortlist and was a particularly enjoyable read. It was a book with great heart, wit and knowledge. It also captured a particular time in British theatre which I found fascinating. It also looked at the role of the playwright and producer. The book was full of honest commentary and reaction, and I think this is a real must-read for anyone interested in theatre. JR Books published Ron Moody's A Still Untitled, Not Quite Autobiography. That's not my critique, that's the title. It was, as you would expect, funny, but there were also some painful, honest stories from Ron about his life and career and how his role as Fagin in Oliver almost dominated his life. Jim Davis edited a collection of essays by Palgrave called Victorian Pantomime, but the book also explored Panto's evolution to modern times. Jen Harvey's Making Contemporary Theatre, published by Manchester University Press, claims to be an extraordinary insight into how some of today's most exciting theatre is made, and it really was fascinating to have access to such a range of high-profile productions and rehearsals. Bill Gaskell's book, Words into Action, published by Nick Hearn, as you would imagine, is a really important book for directors and actors, and should be on every drama school's reading list. Joshua Jampol's Living Opera by Oxford University Press was a series of high-profile interviews from the world of opera. The result is a book full of information and insight, and the book is a documentation of conversations which are full of character and personality from some of the world's leading opera professionals. Dominic Hingorani's book, published by Palgrave, British Asian Theatre, had a launch at the Theatre of Stratford East, so it was great to be able to finally get a chance to read it. I think books like this are really important. There's not enough good critical debate and appreciation from work coming from the Black and Asian theatre sector. And finally, another favourite of mine were a smart and refreshing series of short books, long essays really, published beautifully by Oberon Books as part of their bigger master series. It's a lovely idea. All of the five books that were submitted were intelligent, insightful, and formed a range of topics. From Arnold Wesker's On Theatre, in which Wesker brings together some of his thoughts on theatre over the last 50 years, to Ranjit Bolt's The Art of Translation, Mick Gordon's Theatre in the Mind, Nicholas Strom-Gord's The Role of the Critic, and Ruth Leon's The Sound of Musicals. I'm really going to look forward to reading more from the Oberon's Masters Collection. So, I'm really sorry I can't be there to say hello to everyone and congratulate the authors and publishers, especially the wonderful shortlist and, of course, the winner. Have a great morning. Thank you.
Our next speaker is the critic Jan Parry. She's the doyenne of dance writers and for 20 years was ballet critic of The Observer, as well as writing for many other publications. But that's not all, for she was here last year, not as a judge, but being judged. And she was the winner last year with her Life of Kenneth Macmillan, Different Drummer. Jan.
Thank you, Howard. Well, the hardest task, as anyone who writes about theatre knows, is how to convey the impact of a performance in words, since it's essentially a visceral experience. And trickiest of all is to describe a wordless art form like dance, and even tougher when the performers are long gone and the ballet is irretrievably lost. So I appreciated the lavishly illustrated books put forward for our consideration, and especially the account of Diaghilev and the Golden Age of the Ballet Russe, edited by Jane Pritchard and published by the V&A to accompany the museum's spectacular exhibition. It's far more than a catalogue, though it's a vivid reminder of the costumes and works of art in the exhibition. There are thought-provoking essays, including one by Jane Pritchard herself, on the enduring influence of the designs and productions. I very much valued Andrew Foster's handsome book, which he published himself, about the Russian ballerina Tamara Kasavina, who danced for the Tsar and for Diaghilev, and who ended her career here, married to a British diplomat, Henry Bruce. Foster's labour of true love has been to bring together photographs of Tamara and her roles up to 1918, when she left Russia forever. Amazing how good the black and white photographs were. But then Kasavina was ravishingly beautiful. Bill Cooper's colour photographs of Birmingham Royal Ballet take pride of place in Oberon Book's souvenir of the past 20 years of the touring company's residency in Birmingham, after it moved from Sadler's Wells. No illustrations in Jonathan Burrow's Choreographer's Handbook, published by Routledge. It's a commonplace book, in the very best sense of the word. Stimulating ideas, Zen reflections and paradoxes aimed at practitioners. I relish the text of Cheap Lecture, which I saw Jonathan Burrows perform with Matteo Fargin, and which is so discombobulating that it's impossible to follow without laughing and missing a bit. I'm afraid I couldn't be doing with the manual on site-specific performance by Mike Pearson, published by Palgrave Macmillan. His earnest analysis of these unpredictable events is soul-sapping, couched in academic jargon. However, two seriously academic books published by Oxford University Press throw a surprising light on the influence of classical Greek and Roman drama on modern dance and opera. My eyes were opened wide by essays in The Ancient Dance in the Modern World, which include Fred Astaire, Michael Clarke, and Pina Bausch, as well as the more obvious Isadora Duncan and Martha Graham. It's a fabulous read. I just wish there were more illustrations. So how to write about great acting? By asking actors to talk about what they do. Julian Curry was commissioned by Nick Hearn to interview his choice of 13 actors about seminal roles. Their very personal insights make Shakespeare on stage essential reading, especially if you're intending to see the plays in performance. As Trevor Nunn says in his introduction, if only we had a similar record from previous centuries of how actors understood Shakespeare's great roles. I very much enjoyed Lolly Susie's Conversations with George Hall for An Untidy Career, published by Oberon Books. Now in his 80s, Hall is a repository of British theatre history from the 1940s onwards, full of wonderful anecdotes and advice. I read the book straight after The Life of Dan Leno by Barry Anthony, The King's Jester, published by I.B. Torres. And Hall seemed a living continuation of the music hall tradition. Barry Anthony manages to account for why and how Leno was funny, which is a bit of a miracle. A little gem about an eccentric character from Victorian times is The Story of H.B. Farney by Keith Drummond Sharp. Farney was a Scottish dramatist, librettist, and bigamist who wrote the first ever golfer's manual and who popularized French opera bouffe for British audiences. His book, Buffoonerie Musicale, is published by Quern Press and the Fife Family History Society. Now, combining many of the various aspects I've been talking about is Mike Bradwell's account of his life in alternative theatre, The Reluctant Escapologist, another Nick Hearn book. I'm not sure that Bradwell has ever danced professionally, though he's done pretty well everything else, including diving into a pool while chained up and tied in a sack. And that was for the Ken Campbell Roadshow, and Bradwell's affection for the sadly late Ken Campbell knows no bounds. And he's a Mike Lee mate as well, and an adept at improvisation. Because Bradwell immersed himself so wholeheartedly in the theatrical experiments of the 1960s and 70s, he's remained a believer, even while he's clear-headed and very funny, about the madder idealism of some of the practitioners. He's provocative, witty, scabrously honest, and very angry about admin personnel who believe they're worth more than the artists they're supposed to support. His advice? Find a play, squat a building, now make a show.
Our final judge is Michael Dobson, who is Professor of Shakespeare Studies at Birkbeck College, University of London. Michael.
Thank you. I'm the token theatre history pedant on the panel, the one who doesn't have a medical note saying no academic jargon. So I'm going to be historical and pedantic in dealing with my share of the books we've been looking at. I'm going to start on my home patch with a book about a recent production of Shakespeare in Stratford and then go through in backwards until we get back to Shakespeare again. With a book on the shortlist, which for me was one of the best reads of the year. Oberon Books have now published, as a book, the actor Keith Osborne's blog about playing Marcellus in Greg Doran's production of Hamlet. A very engaging read, though still much more of a blog than a book, we thought, and slightly of the We Were Marvelous Darling school of theatrical memoirs. Much more intellectually heavyweight about current developments in staging Shakespeare and other major playwrights is a Routledge collection assembled by Maria Delgado and Dan Rebellato called Contemporary European Directors. Interviews with and essays about the likes of Thomas Ostermeyer, Declan Donnellan, Ariane Mnuchin, Silviu Percarete, you know, all the people you imagine in that late-night cafe in Bucharest or Berlin or Paris or wherever it may be. If you were worried about what to wear in such a milieu, the person to consult would be Aoife Monks, who has published this year with Palgrave an academic study all about clothes called The Actor in Costume. It's particularly good about drag, which leads us, as naturally as it's ever going to be, to the next volume of Paul O'Grady's memoirs, The Devil Rides Out. This takes up his life from the age of 18 and will be an absolute godsend to future historians of the Liverpool transvestite scene of the 1970s. I lurch back into the 19th century for two books I particularly enjoyed. Kate Newey and Geoffrey Richards have put out a collection of essays with what seemed to me the unlikely title of John Ruskin and the Victorian Theatre, something which Ruskin didn't always like very much. And indeed, it's very interesting about how Ruskin saw Henry Irving and Ellen Terry in Merchant of Venice and really didn't like it very much. Ellen Terry gets a chance to answer back this year in that she's got a book out, and it will be lovely to be able to give her a prize for it. It's the first volume of her collected letters, which has been edited for Pickering and Chatto by Catherine Cockin. And it's a beautifully and reverently produced book, but it's only the first volume. It only takes us down to 1888, and she doesn't really seem to have got round to writing very long or thorough letters by that date. In fact, we thought, you know, it was in danger of being retitled Ellen Terry's Collected Tweets nowadays. But, you know, it's fun. Back among the Romantics, Geoffrey Kahan has produced a superbly eccentric and even obsessive account of the child actor Master William Henry Betty, who enjoyed such a cult success that in 1803 William Pitt suspended Parliament so that MPs could go and see this 12-year-old play Hamlet. It's a lovely account of an early high tide in the development of theatrical celebrity. It's called Betty Mania, published by Lehigh University Press, and it's lovely to know that there's still somebody who thinks it's worth hating John Philip Kemble, you know, all this time later. Elsewhere in the same period, the University of Pennsylvania Press has kept up its reputation for publishing good books on the Georgian theatre, with Michael Ragusa's study, Theatrical Nation, and above all, Felicity Nussbaum's Rival Queens. Felicity has been writing brilliantly for years now about the paradoxical place of the actress in 18th century culture, at once symbolically central and socially marginal. And this book provides a summation of her thinking to date about the likes of Sarah Siddons and Hannah Pritchard. And it's nice to be, you know, to be even mentioning those names again in this building. Back into the 17th century, and at last, Cambridge University Press have published a proper scholarly biography of the Restoration actor-manager Thomas Betterton, somebody who knew the first building on this site when it was a lot less grand than this. It's by David Roberts. We thought this book was, if anything, a bit too scholarly for its own good, but it'll certainly get footnoted for years to come, probably footnoted more than reread, we imagined. To get back to before the Civil Wars, Oxford University Press have published two books simultaneously about Tudor and Stuart court theatricals, Gabriel Heaton's Writing and Reading Royal Entertainments and Laurence Schoher's Reading Masks. And it's an odd fact that by now it's probable that more academics have written studies of these exclusive royal learned fancy dress parties than people ever got to see them at the time. But they, you know, attract a particular kind of learned book, and will no doubt go on doing so. But at last we arrive at a book which tackles a subject of wide popular interest and one which we all agreed should be well up on the shortlist. John Astington's Actors and Acting in Shakespeare's Time brings real flair and grip to a subject which many of us thought we knew perhaps too much about already. Deeply researched, scholarly, but at the same time written in a very lucid and accessible style, this is now the book to which anyone curious about the theatrical profession in Renaissance England should go first. It's a book I expect to see student essays quoting for years and years to come, which in many ways is a very depressing prospect, but at least the quotations will be really good. Thank you.
Well, those were the books, and you've heard what the judges thought about them. But who's won? Well, to tell you, it's my pleasure to introduce an author who, if this prize had been established at the time, would probably have won it with her memoirs, but you'll know her better as an actress, a very distinguished actress. I remember her seeing her play Ophelia to the Hamlets of both Paul Scofield and Robert Helpman in the same production. That was at Stratford quite a few years ago. And she'd hardly left Rep when she was sharing the boards with John Gielgud and Richard Burton. Her remarkable career that has followed has embraced the classics and commercial successes from Girardeau to Tennessee Williams. And it was Charlie Chaplin who launched her into the movies. There have been nearly 50 of them, with co-stars ranging from Olivier to Newman, right up to the Oscar-winning The King's Speech. Well, on television, she's gone from a memorable Anna Karenina with Sean Connery as her Vronsky to a Doctor Who Time Lord alongside David Tennant. A career to respect and to envy. Here she is, Miss Claire Bloom.
How wonderful to be here in this theatre that we all have known all our lives, before our lives, so to speak, and has such a history. I am a neophyte to this research theatre group, or whatever it is called, but I've been given a list today, this morning, of books that every one of which I long to read and will, as many of them as I can. Now, I don't want to keep the author in terrible sense of suspense, so I am going to, with my glasses on, read the name of the winner of this extremely prestigious award. And it is The Reluctant Escapologist, I hope that's right, by Mike Bradwell.
The last thing I won, I think, was a Fringe First in 1977. It's been quite a while. I'd like to thank all the other people who were nominated for their books. I'd like to thank Nick Hearn, my publisher, and all his incredible staff, and particularly Julian Curry. Julian Curry is a Spurs supporter. As he's just demonstrated. Julian and I used to go to football 30 years ago, quite a lot, to White Hart Lane, when I was living in Tottenham, although I am, in fact, a Hull City supporter. At the end of a season 30 years ago, when Tottenham were in the second division before the Premier League, so were Hull City. In the last game of the season, Spurs had to draw to be promoted, and Hull had to win to avoid relegation. The last game was at White Hart Lane, and I went with Julian. Unbelievably, Hull City scored first and were destined to stay up. In the last moment, Spurs equalised. So Spurs went up and Hull went down. 30 years of hurt. So thank you very much. This is for the Tigers. And thank you very much, everybody here. In my book, I come to the point that I don't think that theatre is safe in the hands of grown-ups. So I hope you all never grow up. Thank you very much.